Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I am a CPA, CFP professional, and an AEP, which is Accredited Estate Planner. On the web at Your Financial Choices, online at wdiy.org and the WDIY app, as well as many streaming services. Today is July 15th, 2026. The markets were up today with the Dow closing at 52,658, the NASDAQ at 26,269, and the S&P at 7,572. Our topic tonight is random thoughts from me. Random thoughts. It's one of my favorite topics. We are live tonight. We will take your questions. Bob and Cindy are in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic and I will do my best to answer them. The number is 610-758-8810. Again, that's 610-758-8810. You can speak live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, you can give your question to Cindy and they'll bring it in to me. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. So random thoughts, what do I mean? Well, sometimes, you know, thoughts I have might not fit specifically into a particular topic, or I think sometimes that there might be some extra nuances I may, you know, like to add or offer. And you know, it's just kind of fun to talk about things off the top of my head sometimes. But when I started thinking about random thoughts, I realized, too, that I, over the years, have come up with a number of sayings that I use on the show. And for regular listeners, you're used to hearing them, but there's always new listeners as well. So I thought that maybe I would, you know, share some of those, you know, statements that I use from time to time. I'll start with that. And then I do want to talk a little bit about risk tolerance and what that means and kind of my random thoughts on that. A little bit of random thoughts on transition periods. And of course, one of my favorite subjects, estate planning. So that's kind of like the items I'm going to hit tonight. So random thoughts. First, the sayings. Money gives you options. That just came up recently in something I was talking about with someone. Money gives you options. That's why it's an important subject to pay attention to. Power of compounding. We have to remember the power of compounding. We also have to remember that the power of compounding can work two ways. So the power of compounding is really powerful when it's compounding in our favor, meaning we have savings, investments that are making money over time, and then that money that has made money is then also making money. So it's just compounding over time. The reason why I say it could go both ways is because if you're someone who is not saving but someone who is spending, and you're spending on credit cards, you know, it starts to build up as well if you're not paying timely or paying more than, you know, the minimum amount. At least you, even at a minimum amount with credit cards, it's very hard to get through that. Okay, so just be careful of that. People who know how much they spend usually have money. So people who know how much they spend usually have money. Think about that for a minute. People who know how much they spend usually have money. They're aware of it. They're more careful. They're more present when they're spending money. They think about it maybe a little bit more. So usually people who know how much they spend usually have money. Let me give a quick little random thought tip on that I've talked about in the past. If you're not someone who likes to budget, you get stressed out about it, you get overwhelmed by it, and that's why you can't save money. There are little tricks you can do. One that we have talked about for years since I've been at Valley National Financial Advisors is the funnel method. That if let's pretend you say you want to save, you know, $100 a month or $500 a month, whatever it would be, you look at how much money is coming in and you put all the money that's coming in into your savings account, less the amount that you don't want to, or the less the amount you want to save. So let's pretend you have $2,500 a month coming in and you want to save $500 a month. Well, have $2,500 go into your saving, move $2,000 into your checking every month, $2,500 in, $2,000 out to checking, $2,500 in, $2,000 out to checking. And over time, what should be building up in your savings account would be that $500 a month. After 6 months, you would have $3,000 in that story, right? $500 a month times six. So when you're doing that, you're kind of controlling your budget without having to actually budget or keep track of all your expenses. And that's a great way to start if you don't feel you have a handle on your budget now. Don't call it a budget. Call it cash flow management. Change the words, whatever it does, whatever it takes to help you work through this. All right, so that's the funnel method. And granted, there are going to be times where it ebbs and flows a little bit differently, like if people have quarterly car payments or semi-annual, you know, homeowners insurance and things like that. Sometimes there is a bit of an ebb and flow to it, so just keep that in mind too. But that should work pretty well for a lot of people. People who think they have money sometimes don't. And people who think they don't have money usually do. That's what that's just been my experience over the years. So I have people who just spend, and sometimes they're the ones who might not have money. And then I have people who don't spend anything. They don't take any withdrawals from their portfolios and they think they don't have money. And over time, that power of compounding, they generally do. Years ago, I did a lunch and learn at Air Products, in fact, locally here. And that lunch and learn was about estate planning, and we called it Plan While You Can. Plan While You Can. That's very important for not just estate planning, but for any kind of goals that you want to achieve. So plan while you can. Part of that presentation was where there's a will, there's a way. Where there's a will, there's a way, pun intended. Another saying, it's time in the market, not timing the market. That's from an investment standpoint. It's time in the market, not timing the market. When you're trying to time the market, you have to be right twice. You have to be right on going in and going out. And so over the long term, generally with a diversified portfolio, that bears out more often than trying to time the market or daytime, you know, day traders and things like that. Risk and reward, that's not a statement. It's just understanding what risk and reward is. And quite often when you take a little bit more risk, you're hoping for a little bit more reward. We see that in investments. So I'll be talking about risk tolerance and that'll come into play for that. And you know, for regular listeners, again, during tax season, when I'm talking about tax returns, I quite often talk about the different kinds of tax rates we have, and it's on different kinds of income. And not all income is taxed equally. Not all income is taxed equally. We just were talking to a client today, very excited about the returns on, some treasury investments. And that treasury investments does have some tax favored treatment. The taxation on those treasuries are not taxed until it's actually I bonds until they're cashed, and they're not subject to state tax, but it's all ordinary income. And the return on that is not necessarily as attractive as returns that one may or may not be able to get in the market. Remember, we're talking about risk and reward. low risk on treasuries, higher risk in the equity markets. You have to balance that. And we're going to, again, talk about that with the investor risk tolerance. Folks, we are at the first break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Lights, laughter, local celebrities, and a great cause. Tickets are now on sale for WDIY's Lehigh Valley Hollywood Squares happening Tuesday, October 27th at the State Theater in Easton. Join your favorite community personalities for a live game show with comedy, trivia, audience participation, and raffles, all benefiting WDIY. Get your tickets today at statetheater.org/event/Hollywood-squares and be part of one of the Lehigh Valley's most entertaining nights of the year.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices on WDIY. Our topic tonight is Random Thoughts. And we have a call from Easton. We have Alan. Hi, Alan.
Hey, Lori. How are you doing?
Good. You can hear me okay, then. I understand. How can I help you?
Well, I'm just back from a few weeks in Europe, and I realize I need to fix some things around home.
Uh-huh.
And my question involves a loan.
Uh-huh.
Now, I have an electrical situation, plumbing, and, of course, my mower just broke today. A couple of things. I could use my own money, take it out of my savings.
Mm-hmm.
I am an old guy, so I need an RMD this year.
Mm-hmm.
So I could actually take that, and that would cover the expense, a few thousand dollars, I'm thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Or the third thing, I could borrow my own money from my credit union and pay it back.
Mm-hmm.
Or the fourth is a home equity loan.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know which would be, none of these would really put me at a disadvantage or really an advantage.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know which way to go.
Well, the required minimum distribution, if that's something you have to take anyway, and you need funds for the repairs, et cetera, that you currently have, and the markets have done, you know, fairly reasonably well this year, now could be a good time to go ahead and take your required minimum distribution to use it for those purposes, if you understand. Meaning, let's pretend you took a loan instead, and the loan might be at a 6% rate, home equity loan. I'm just making this up. Home equity line of credit might be 6%. And then you'd have to pay that back, and you could pay that back. Let's say you decide you're going to pay it back next year. You decide not to hold it. But now you're going to have to maybe pull money out of your IRA when the market might not be doing as well to pay back that loan. Or it could just be costing you when you don't need that extra cost if you have to take the funds anyway. Now, the only thing I might say about that is, do you ordinarily use your required minimum distribution for other cash flow needs? Sometimes people know they're going to get that and they count on that to pay like their real estate taxes or to do year-end gifting or something like that. Do you normally have your RMD earmarked for any other reason?
No, last year was the first year that I had to take one, so I waited till December because I was earning good money on that.
Okay, there you go.
I waited till December and just, you know, put that in my my regular savings.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really have to use it, but
mm-hmm.
now I find some, my house is getting old and I'm getting old and mm-hmm. things probably better be taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
So I could earmark that.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, I think that might be a smart way to go. If you have the funds available, you have to take it out anyway. Now, I sometimes use required minimum distributions to cover the federal income tax for clients. Do you have you made sure that you would otherwise have your federal tax covered?
Yeah, I definitely have it covered. I get money back. So
okay, all right. Well, I think, you know, if you've got to take it anyway, you know, just based on what you just explained to me, if the RMD is going to cover it and the market's done well, might be a time to pull it, and then you know you have the money.
Yeah, okay. No, that's good advice.
Okay.
So I hate to take it out because it's earning me good money, but, you know, I got these expenses, so.
Yeah, well, it is. If it's earning good money, think about what happens if we have a pullback, and then would you have wished that you took it out?
Yeah, I don't know. I won't regret however the money comes.
Okay.
I just want things to be fit, and I want to mow my lawn. So
There you go. Well, Alan, I think it's really smart to be in front of these decisions and think it all through, and you know, you can think about, you know, what we just talked about, and maybe if, you know, I don't think the bank's going to offer you a loan that's so low that you would do that in lieu of, you know, just paying cash. So,
you know, probably not. Let me just add another random thought. My son and I just spent nearly 3 weeks in Europe.
Nice.
And I did not use cash once.
Mm-hmm.
Everything over there is tap card.
Yeah.
From the smallest, from the largest. So any of your listeners planning to go over, take your tap cards and enjoy Europe.
There you go. Yes, I know, because a lot of places don't take cash anymore. So you do have to be prepared for that in foreign countries.
Exactly.
Yes.
Exactly.
Well, make sure you pay off if you used any credit. Make sure you pay that off as well. I don't like
to
take credit.
Right. I have no expenses, so I'm okay.
All right.
Well, thank you for your help
again. Thank you, Alan. Take care. Have a good day. And that's kind of fun. Random thoughts, right? I like this topic if it generates, you know, people to kind of think outside the box and think about a few things. And, you know, that is something I probably should have mentioned, too, that at the end of every show, I always say be proactive, not reactive. That's really important because I consistently tell clients that if we're in front of our decisions, we have a lot more options than if you come to me after you've already made the decision. So keep that in mind. Yeah, when I think about, you know, to kind of follow along with what Alan and I were just talking about, when I think about when people have to take a required minimum distribution, then the market's done well, we have to take that money anyway. Do we really need to wait? I mean, typically, I might wait till the end of the year because I'm actually using the IRAs quite often to cover the federal tax for my clients because the IRS deems the withholdings to be made evenly throughout the year. So when I have clients who have big tax bills, it's kind of nice to use the IRA for that. But it doesn't mean that we're raising the cash at the end of the year. We might raise the cash earlier than that. If we're watching and seeing where we are with the market and maybe there's some positions that we need to rebalance, we might raise the cash then. So we don't wait till the last minute to necessarily raise the cash. So it might not be a big deal to kind of take some of that out. And Alan, if you're still listening, that might be something to look at when you're looking at your IRA and how it's invested. When you say, you know, you don't want to take it out of the market, your IRA may not be 100% invested in the market. You might have part of your IRA invested in fixed income, and you could always peel off that part if you want. Okay, so just be aware of that. So we are going to talk about random thoughts tonight, and I kind of gave a bunch of statements, or what do I want to say, sayings that I use quite often. I did that earlier at the top of the show. But then I thought we could just talk about some observations, some thoughts I have on risk tolerance, because, you know, I've been mentioning this to clients a lot more in the past year about how we think about risk tolerance and what it means to us. quite often people are saying to me, well, I'm older now, so shouldn't I be more conservative? Or I'm retiring now, shouldn't I be more conservative now? It all depends. And I'm going to talk about why I think it depends when we come back from this next break. If you have questions like Alan did, you can talk live on air with me or off air, whatever you're more comfortable doing. The phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Are you saying out with the old, in with the new when it comes to your old car? WDIY's vehicle donation program will turn your ride into your favorite programs on Lehigh Valley Public Radio. The towing is free, all the paperwork is taken care of, and your gift is tax deductible. For more information, call 610-694-8100 extension 4 or visit wdiy.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. The phone number is 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air with me or just give your question to Cindy and they'll bring it in. I'm just talking random thoughts tonight. So definitely if you have questions, you're welcome to give us a call. So random thoughts around risk tolerance. What do I mean there? The traditional way that advisors talk to clients about risk tolerance is your time horizon and what is your risk tolerance. Okay. So time horizon, as I said, so many people come to us and they say, oh, you know, should I get more conservative? I'm older. Or how conservative should I be now that I'm older? And I always say, I don't know if that's how we should talk about it. And then I'll tell you what the risk tolerance is. So let me go through a typical risk tolerance questionnaire. So when we talk about time horizon, the questions are usually, when are you going to begin withdrawing from the investments? And once you begin withdrawing from the investments, how long do you want it to last? So let's pretend you say, I'm going to start, begin withdrawing like in less than 3 years, and I want it to last 11 years or more. You know, along with the other scores, that might give us a number to say, okay, this is your time horizon factor. And marry that with the risk tolerance factor to come up with an investment objective, which could be growth on your investments, income and growth on your investments, you know, safety of principal, just income, you know, kind of telling us what you need from the portfolio. So that time horizon is interesting. Okay, so how soon do you need the money if you don't need it for a long time? What that's telling us is you have a longer time to recover if the market goes down. If there's more volatility in the market and you have a longer time horizon, you could take more risk technically in this little scenario because you have a longer time to recover. So that's why they ask, when do you expect to start withdrawing and then how long do you want it to last? Now, when we go to the risk tolerance piece, we're kind of talking about, you know, what is your knowledge of investments? Do you have, you know, reasonable amount of knowledge? Do you have none? Or do you have excellent? How are you doing with, you know, being informed about investing? What amount of financial risk are you willing to take when you invest? What does that mean? What financial risk? Lower than average risk? Expecting to earn lower than average returns? Take average risks, expecting to earn average returns, above average risk, expecting to earn above average returns. So remember earlier I said risk reward. When people take on more risk, they're expecting more reward. So that's when we talk about, you know, if you're okay with above average risk, then you should expect an above average return. If you don't want to take any risk, even below average risk, then you may get below average returns, all right? Then what kind of investments do you currently own? Because that could indicate to an investment advisor what kind of risk tolerance you have taken over your, you know, investing years. If you have kept everything in cash or in CDs or money markets, that certainly tells us, you know, that you're very, very preservation-minded. This is one of my random thoughts where people say, you know, they don't want to lose money. They don't want to lose money. And they keep it all like, you know, under the mattress or in fixed income. You're not getting the same kind of returns one would get by investing in the markets. Again, investing in the markets, you're exposing yourself to more volatility. There's no guarantee of returns, but you're expecting better returns because you're taking on more risk. But over time, those portfolios historically have gone up significantly compared to a portfolio that would be strictly in fixed income. So then I always say to people, who lost money in this scenario? Because one didn't make very much money and the other one may have. So how you have invested over time could indicate to an investment advisor what your risk tolerance might be. The other thing I feel, another random thought, is I'm not sure how much investment advisors educate their clients. It takes time. And over time, you know, what my expectation is, the more, you know, people know about investing and understanding what it means, understanding the risks, understanding the taxation, understanding, you know, growth rates, understanding withdrawal rates, the more that you understand that as the consumer, as the client, I think the more engaged you are, the more aware you are, the better you can, you know, watch out for your own financial situation and have an understanding of it. And I'm going to come back to that after I kind of finish going through this risk tolerance and why that could matter for you. And then there's like other scenarios that just kind of, you know, test, you know, your tolerance, asking questions about if the market's down, would you totally pull out, you know, if the market's up, would you, you know, what kind of returns do you expect for the investments that you're doing? All right. So we take these together, the time horizon, and then those questions, can you sleep at night? Are you going to react? Are you going to do knee-jerk reactions? That kind of thing. That's the risk tolerance to determine what kind of investor profile you have for conservative allocation, moderately conservative, moderate, moderately aggressive, or aggressive. Now, if you were listening carefully, you never heard me say anything about how much money you had. It was talking about time horizon, and it was talking about, you know, how you feel about risk. It doesn't talk about like how much money you have. And frankly, I'm not sure I've seen any risk tolerance questionnaires that do talk about how much money you have. My random thought is you can't take risk with money that you're going to need like right away. So when someone has, and I'll give you a wild example. If someone never takes money out of their portfolio, they have pensions, they have Social Security, they never take money out of their portfolio, and they have $20 million. Do you think they can take more risk than someone who has $40,000? So the person with $20 million, they can take no risk if they don't want to take any risk. They could take no risk because that money is going to last them probably for the rest of their lives because they never use any of it. Because they have other sources of income, but they could also take as much risk as they want maybe because they also don't need it. Whereas someone with $40,000, they may need that. They may need that tomorrow. So they may not be able to take as much risk if they need that money. So to me, risk tolerance should be more around, yes, your time horizon. Yes, can you sleep at night? But more importantly, how much have you saved and how much can you, you know, maybe take a little bit of risk with over the long period of time? So if someone said to me, I don't need this money for, you know, 15 years, Well, maybe that money should be working harder for you than just cash would work for you. So keep in mind not just your age, your time horizon. It, to me, there's a lot of other factors that need to be considered as well. Yes, your risk tolerance. But when I come back, I'm going to talk about what really is risk tolerance and why it might be important for you to understand the different ways that one could invest and what that might mean to you and your overall portfolio and investment strategy. We are talking about random thoughts tonight. I'm just kind of making some observations. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Welcome back. If you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. We're just talking random thoughts tonight. And right now I'm giving you some random thoughts on risk tolerance. Going back to, you know, the types of investments one may have as an indicator of their risk tolerance, what we might look at is, okay, has this person, they come in with their, you know, investments, and we say, okay, what do you have? We need to look at, you know, how you've been allocated, whether it's in a 401k, Roth IRA, individual account, joint account, bank account, whatever it might be. And we look to see how the client or the prospect has been invested. And if we see, you know, high allocation to fixed income, which is typically bonds. Think about it. Fixed income bonds pay, a coupon rate. Bank accounts pay an interest rate. CDs pay an interest rate. That's fixed. That's fixed income. So it's kind of like the underlying investment's not really moving up and down too much. You can argue a little bit with bonds, yes, but for the most part, the principle of that fixed income is really kind of staying pretty steady. And it's the interest and or coupon rate that we're looking at for income, and that's very conservative. And then people feel like that's preservation minded almost, and that's, you know, securing your investments. That kind of income is ordinary income. That ordinary income gets included on your tax return if it's in an individual or joint account. If it's in an IRA, that's ordinary income, but your IRA gets, you know, taxed as ordinary income anyway. When it comes out, it doesn't matter. If you have that even in a Roth IRA, Roth IRAs are tax-free as long as you follow all the rules, you know, 5 years, older, longer of 5 years, age 59 and a half, blah, 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 certain exceptions. So Roth IRAs, no matter how you have them invested, that would come out income tax-free. You might have fixed income in there as well. So we want to think about how we invest for our risk tolerance, but we also are very aware of tax consequences. You know, people aren't necessarily coordinating the elements of their financial life. This is what I love to do, to bring these elements together. Because think about it, if you're a listener and you recall that when you do your taxes, you say, oh my gosh, I owed taxes, or oh my gosh, I got taxes back, or oh my gosh, you know, I got my pay stub and they took taxes out. People seem to be very aware of taxes, even though we may not always understand all of those taxes and what they mean to us. But we may not be as aware of the taxation on the investments that we have. So when we think about our asset allocation and our risk tolerance, we should also consider how we are investing amongst our various investment options. So Roth IRAs, think about this, are going to grow income tax-free. So grow. Don't we want them to grow then? And where are we going to get the growth? So we want to think about the geography of where we are putting our investments as well. I said IRAs get taxed at ordinary income rates. What kind of investments give us ordinary income? fixed income. So if I'm going to look to see what my risk tolerance is, which, you know, helps my overall portfolio, I might as a total think about what that risk tolerance is. And maybe my risk tolerance is moderate. Moderate would mean I would have some equities and I would have some fixed income. Well, where would I want to put that fixed income? I might want to put that fixed income more maybe in my IRA. Depends. It depends on where you are in your timeline. Because if I'm only 30 years old, I want my IRA to grow like crazy too, perhaps. Okay. So it doesn't mean I have it all in fixed income. It also does play into your time horizon. But as we get closer to our retirement years, I might not be thinking about more conservative. As I get closer to my retirement years, I might be thinking about what's the tax favored treatment of my various buckets of savings. Okay, so let's, instead of thinking about our risk tolerance, let's think about where we're going to put our investments in what buckets. I hope that's kind of making sense. These random thoughts, unfortunately, go randomly. let's switch for a moment now to talk about transition periods. So transition periods, I think, cannot be underestimated. And for listeners who may be going through transition periods, which at some point in our lives we all do, which is, you know, maybe we are a student and now we become a wage earner. That's a transition. And we might get excited about our first paychecks and, you know, go into a nice fancy apartment, buy a nice fancy car, and all of a sudden we don't know how to budget and we're not saving money perhaps. So that could be a transition period. We could go through a transition period when we're getting married, when we start having children, we buy a house, we lose our jobs, we have unemployment, we retire. So different types of transition periods that one may go through could be very sensitive times, and we have to make sure that we're ahead of decisions that we're making during those periods to not put ourselves at risk for, not thinking through things. Because sometimes there's some euphoria with the transition. Recently just had a client send us a pay stub, got a new job, wanted to just get an idea of the taxes. Well, the income is practically doubling. And when we told him how much money he was going to owe in taxes, he was in somewhat of shock. And I said, well, you know, take the money. Like, how do you manage this? His question was like, how am I going to manage this? Well, you know, still take the money because you're still going to be ahead, even net of tax. Yes, it's a lot more tax that you're going to owe, but you're still ahead, even net of tax. And, you know, what kind of happened there? Well, this person, was working at a job where they got, you know, like a bonus. And then mid-year they left and went to work for another company and are getting a sign-on bonus. So these bonuses sometimes don't withhold enough tax. They withhold like a smaller amount. But then when you add that income all together, it throws you in maybe a higher tax bracket, maybe even a very high tax bracket. And the withholdings on those bonuses weren't enough to cover the taxes due. So that was a bit of a surprise. So euphoria in getting a new job, making all this money, but perhaps then spending that money because we get excited. We see that money come in the bank. It looks great. What can we do? Oh, we can do renovations. We can go on that vacation. We can, you know, buy a second home, whatever it might be. But we didn't think through that period of transition of what it means for the long term. And it, for example, what it could mean for the long term in that story was higher taxes that they're going to have to set aside. Those won't be due until April. And boy, if this person wasn't smart enough to send us that pay stub, which was very smart, wouldn't they have been surprised next April when they had a tax bill that was really huge? So that was being in front of, you know, their decisions and understanding their options and knowing that they needed to make sure they had that money set aside and that they didn't spend it all. But the other part of that transition is they may, you know, you get this euphoria of getting this big influx of money, and then your lifestyle could change. But then next year, guess what? We don't have that same bonus. And so you don't want to get used to spending at that level if that's not going to be the level you're going to be at, you know, over the next X number of years. All right. So that was just an example of of one of those transition periods. The other big transition I see, which I is most prevalent when working with clients who, you know, come to us and they want to know if they can retire, and they might be like age 50, 55, and we're working with them for years, and then finally, yes, it's time to retire. Well, I will tell you, with working with clients all these years, you know what happens as soon as someone retires? They retire, and then they're sitting around the house, and they see everything. It was just like COVID. Remember during COVID when everybody was doing renovations, and you couldn't find appliances, and you couldn't find wood, and you couldn't find anything to do because all of a sudden everyone was, you know, building decks on the back of their house or whatever it might be. When you're home and all of a sudden you're looking around and you see all these improvements that need to be made, but now you're not getting a paycheck because you've retired. So that's what I see happen. Sometimes people are looking for those improvements. They didn't notice them before when they were working because they were too busy to notice them. And now they see them. And now it's like, oh, shoot, do we put that on a line of credit? As Alan said earlier when you called, is it a line of credit? Is it a credit card? Is it a home equity of refinancing? Or do we take money out of our retirement account? So you want to think about those kinds of things ahead of time. Generally, what I tell people is, why don't you try to think of those before you retire and do it out of your current cash flow, your current, you know, wages? Because sometimes what you could, if you think about it, if quite often we can live on less money when we retire, because when we're working, we're paying, you know, higher maybe medical costs. We might have putting money into our 401k. We might be putting money into a flexible spending account or a health savings account. We have, you know, might be driving to work. We might have dry cleaning. So we have Social Security tax. We have Medicare tax. So sometimes when we're working, we have all those extra expenses that we won't have when we retire. So quite often the pull from our investments might not be as much as what we were making. So if you're making $100,000, you're not having to pull $100,000 from your investments when you retire. There's others, you know, it's going to be less. And you may be eligible for Social Security. You may be eligible for pension. You might be age 73 and have to take money out of your IRA, whatever it might be. So keep that in mind. But when you're working, let's pretend you think you're going to earn, you know, you're going to have less money coming in. Why don't you try living on less money while you're working? And then if you're living on less while you're working, now you've stored up some emergency reserves, and that's really great, so that when you retire, you can be pulling from, you know, some of those emergency reserves. I've had clients who've retired before age 65, before Medicare, and they would have to go on the marketplace for health insurance. Rather than pull money from their investments or their IRAs, they had, you know, cash in the bank and high-yield savings or money market accounts, and they used that money. They controlled the money on their tax return and qualified for some tax credits toward their health insurance premiums. So, you know, thinking ahead, you know, what do you want this to look like? It's not just improvements that I see people want to do when they retire. All of a sudden, they also want to travel. So quite often, people are either doing home improvements or travel, and the travel can add up to quite a bit, too. And quite often, I even have parents say, we want to take the kids on vacation, and they pay for the kids. So think about that if that's something you want to do. Do you work an extra couple months so that when you retire, you could pay for the kids for the vacation? That's being in front of those decisions. So vacations, home improvements, that type of stuff. So think about that before you retire. There's other periods of transitions, but those are the ones that I'm kind of going to talk about. We are at our last break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We still have some time. 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
WDIY 88.1 offers many choices and real voices. Folk music, from folk classics to the Gaelic traditions of the British Isles, to bluegrass and old-time music of Appalachia, to the modern-day singer-songwriters telling the story of today's world. You'll find it all here on WDIY. Listen and enjoy the wide variety of folk music every weekday evening, 7 to 9 p.m., just after NPR News headlines, and Sunday mornings at 11 a.m. on 88.1 WDIY and streaming at WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. If you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810. You can also send questions through yourfinancialchoices.com. And I simply answer them, and I don't bother you after that. So sometimes I think people get nervous to think that, you know, I'm going to chase you down, but that does not happen. This is an educational show, and I'm here to help at least give some general guidance. So tonight we've just had some random thoughts, and you kind of get a taste for how my brain works. It's kind of, it does have random thoughts. We talked about risk tolerance a little bit and kind of getting some framework around that. I really think that risk tolerance should include how much you have in assets, because how much can you take risk with that money? I think that's really critical. I think that's important. And a quick little just example on that, just so that I make sure I tie up loose ends on that. For example, if someone is taking no money out of their portfolio, or even maybe a little bit of money, let's say $10,000, and your portfolio is $1,300,000. This is the example I always use. And they get nervous about the markets and they say, should I get out of the market? I say, do you need $1,300,000 tomorrow? These are the questions you have to ask yourself, and you can work with your advisor to go through it. Because if you don't need all of that money, in X period of time, then you can perhaps leave some of that to work for you and grow for you. All right. We have to worry about inflation. We have the time value of money. We want to worry about, remember, compounding. And are we compounding at 3% or are we compounding at 10%? Okay, no guarantees with investments. As we often say, this is an educational show. But when we're factoring in that the money that you've saved over your lifetime needs to last you for your retirement and for perhaps your long-term care later on, you know, we want to make sure that you're going to have what you need when you need it. All right. We talked about periods of transition. Trying to be in front of those. Emergency reserves are very important. And trying to, if you get a big influx of money, whether it's a bonus from a promotion or from an inheritance, we are going to see a lot more people inheriting. It's that time. If you get that big influx of inheritance money and you blow through it right away, that might not demonstrate that you were a good steward of that person that you received that inheritance from. I always talk to people about being good stewards of their assets, and particularly of inheritances. You know, as a parent myself, working hard, I want to pass on assets to children. Not everyone does, by the way. And children, if you're listening, you can never count on an inheritance. I always tell people, my clients, you don't count on the inheritance. Let's do your planning for you. And the inheritance will just be gravy if you get it, because you never know what might happen. But I will say, parents work very hard, and if they are inclined and have the ability to pass on those assets to children, it's because they want to give you something better than they may have had themselves. So I think it's really important to, you know, be respectful of that and be good stewards. But sometimes, and by the way, as a parent, I want my children to use that money. Don't get me wrong. I want to, make their life more fulfilled in ways that we can. But you also still want to demonstrate that you're a good steward and don't get, you know, overzealous with receiving those funds. You never know what might happen. Maybe you're working and you think, oh, I could, you know, stop working, and you might be able to. It all depends, again, on what the amount that you might get. But just watch out. It's just, I like people to just kind of sit with it for a little bit, get into a flow, kind of understand what it's going to do for you. Is it, you know, can you just take the income off it? Can you take some of the principal and just kind of watch and see how it works? Same thing happens with lotteries. You know, we've heard all the stories about people who win the lottery and, you know, people come out of the woodwork trying to get it, and, you know, people spend it maybe frivolously. So just be good stewards. So estate planning, let me see if I can squeeze in some stuff about estate planning. I wish I could tell everybody to get their estate planning done, and they do it. We talk about it often. I think it's really important. I also say, gosh, you know, if you're gone, what do you care? So maybe it doesn't matter because you'll be gone and it won't mean anything to you. But it really can ease the burden that your heirs or your representatives have to go through when you're gone. Why not, you know, set yourself up and do it nice to make it for those people who survive you, that it's a little bit smoother for them, whether it's individual beneficiaries, whether it's family beneficiaries, or whether it's nonprofits and charities. You know, why not kind of think about that? And again, when you're thinking about how hard you've worked for the assets that you've had, don't you think it would be worthwhile taking a little bit of time to think about what you want to happen to those assets? So, for example, I had someone once say, well, you know, if I end up with like a federal estate tax, I'll just give it all to charity. I said, well, the issue there is you're going to be dead. You're going to be dead. So unless you say it's going to go to charity while you're alive, it's not going to charity. So you want to kind of understand the assets that you have and how, not only who are they going to, but how are they getting to them? So that's where we talk about probate and non-probate. And the simplest way for someone to understand probate is, do I have to look to the will to see who gets it? That's my layman's terms. I'm not a lawyer. That's my layman's terms for understanding probate. Do I have to look to the will to see who gets it? So if I have an IRA with a beneficiary, and the beneficiary is my, you know, my husband and then my children, well, that is non-probate. I don't have to look to the will to see who gets it then. If I have, so that's probate and non-probate, but we have a call, Bridger. We have Carolyn from Sailorsburg. Hi, Carolyn. How are you?
Good, Lori. Thank you for taking my call.
How can I help?
The nice friend who has agreed to be our executor of our estate mentioned that he thought in some cases you might almost have to set up a, like a 501c3 type, or some kind of, maybe not that, but some kind of entity whereby funds go in there for last minute taxes and things until the estate is completely settled. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Well, a 501c3 is a nonprofit charity.
Right.
A charitable,
yeah, I'm that sure can, that's not right, but yeah. It was some kind of entity.
Yeah, yeah. An estate, you know, an estate could pay the taxes. So, Carolyn, it all depends on one situation. So, for example, if we live in a state that has like an inheritance tax, like Pennsylvania does, we're heir out of Pennsylvania. So Pennsylvania has an inheritance tax. New Jersey has an inheritance tax. And an inheritance tax, different than an estate tax, is basically like a transfer tax on to whom the people are receiving. So in Pennsylvania, for example, if it's a spouse, there's an inheritance tax of zero. If it's parents or children, that's lineal up and down, it's 4.5%. If it's to siblings, it's 12%. If it's to anybody else, it's 15%. And I think charity is zero. So there's an inheritance tax. In New Jersey, if it's going up and down, parents, children, it's zero. If it's siblings, it's, I think, a different rate. And then non relatives, it's a different rate. And those rates can go quite high in New Jersey. Then separately, we have an estate tax, a federal estate tax, which right now the exemption's like $15 million. So we're not seeing too many people with federal estates. What happens, though, when someone dies, there's an executor appointed if there are any assets that are probate that have to go to the through the will to see who gets them. So let's pretend someone has IRAs that they've named to go to charity. They have Roth IRAs that go to individuals. They have a transfer on death account that goes to, you know, nieces and nephews. All of those have beneficiary designations on them. There's no estate in that case. We don't have to open an estate, and all the assets go directly. Now, I said the IRA goes to charity. Well, the charity is zero tax, so there's no tax on that. The Roth IRA is going to, who did I say, niece, that's 15%. There's going to be an inheritance tax on that. And the transfer on death account is going to niece and nephew. There's a transfer inheritance tax on that. So what happens in Pennsylvania, if I don't have an estate, I don't have an executor, a kind of a personal representative would have to file the inheritance tax return potentially. But each of those beneficiaries, if there is no estate and no executor to pay the inheritance tax, Pennsylvania is going to come and say, hey, you beneficiaries who are getting those assets, you need to pay the inheritance tax. All right. Ordinarily, there are some estates where there would be some estate assets. For example, if someone owns a home and they die, normally the home is not going beneficiary designation. It's going to go through the estate. Therefore, now we have that executor who gets appointed. There's a will. They get appointed. They open an estate account with an EIN number, and they open up a regular bank account. They go to sell the house. They put the proceeds of the house in the estate account. They pay the inheritance tax. Ordinarily, what I typically see is wills that say the estate will bear the burden of the debts and estate or inheritance tax. So let's pretend back to that story. We had the IRAs going to charity, zero tax. All the charity needs is a death certificate. It goes automatically. It doesn't have to go through the will at all. Nieces and nephews, we transfer on death, Roth IRA, they only need a death certificate. Those can go out right to them. The executors, go ahead.
I think that the setting up the EIN was what he was talking about.
Yep.
And the situation he was concerned about is you sell the house, you distribute the proceeds, and then you find out that there's like real estate taxes or something.
Yeah, no, what happens is when working with a lawyer too, they help guide the executor typically, but the executor sells the house, puts the proceeds in the estate checking account. They file the inheritance tax return because the executor's responsibility is to marshal the assets and kind of identify them. And they're responsible for filing the inheritance tax return, whereby they can report those, the Roth IRA, the transfer on death, the, you know, IRA, whatever it might be. They also report who all those beneficiaries are. They report any expenses they have, probate costs, legal fees, tax preparation fees, moving fees, cleanup fees, cost of expense of selling the home. And then they come up with the tax due. They pay the tax. Pennsylvania, in our case, coming out of Pennsylvania, they have to approve the filing of the inheritance tax return. And then typically the lawyers make sure it looks like all the expenses have been, you know, reported. There's also an estate notice that's filed in local publications to say, hey, if there's any creditors or debtors out there that have a claim against this estate, you've got to come forward now, because otherwise the statute of limitations is closed because we told you you had to come forward and you didn't. So ordinarily it's pretty seamless in most estates, I would say.
Okay. Great.
All
yes,
right.
That explains
I hope
it.
That
Thank
helps.
You so much.
Okay, Carolyn, thanks for calling. I'm right at the end here. So have a good night.
Okay.
Thanks.
Take
bye
care.
Bye. I love talking about estates. So we will, in the fall, I've already lined up, I think, a couple attorneys to come in and talk about estate planning a little bit more and some of the differences. And, you know, my big takeaway, my random thought for tonight for you folks for estate planning is make sure that you get your documents done. At a minimum, check your asset titling, check your beneficiary designations. And, you know, like, I hate to see estates as beneficiaries on IRAs. It's just like the worst. So make sure you're reviewing that. Have the power of attorney, healthcare power of attorney, and your will. All right. Please work on those. Folks, I'm out next week. I have Bill Henderson and Chris Holland from Valley National Financial Advisors Investment Department to come in and talk about the first half of the year for the market observations and what they watch. I'll be back the next week. Thank you, listeners. Thank you for the questions, Alan and Carolyn. Thank you, Bob and Cindy, for being here. Thank you, Bridger. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices and have a great week.